This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. Hello, I'm Rick Pantaleo for Carol Castillo. Early in November, the Trump administration enacted new policies on U.S.-Cuban relations that rolled back portions of the Obama policy on more open relations with the Caribbean island nation. President Trump announced his plans for the new U.S. policies on Cuba on June 16th during a speech in Miami's Little Havana neighborhood, where many Cuban exiles live and is the center of Cuban-American social, cultural, and political activity.
The previous administration's easing of restrictions on travel and trade does not help the Cuban people. They only enrich the Cuban regime. The profits from investment and tourism flow directly to the military. The regime takes the money and owns the industry. The outcome of last administration's executive action has been only more repression and a move to crush the peaceful democratic movement. Therefore, effective immediately, I am canceling the last administration's completely one-sided deal with Cuba.
The new policies, which put tighter restrictions on U.S. travel and trade with Cuba, were put into effect early in November. Under the new restrictions, Americans will no longer be allowed to make most individual visits to Cuba. To travel to Cuba now, U.S. citizens must travel for specific purposes in one of the groups that are licensed by the Treasury Department and are accompanied by a representative of the group. Americans are also now barred from patronizing nearly 200 Cuban businesses the U.S. State Department determined benefits the Cuban government or its military, intelligence, and security agencies. But the new Trump policies also leaves many of the Obama-Cuban policies intact. For example, the U.S. Embassy will remain open in Havana, although much of its staff was sent home in late September after diplomats became ill after what is believed to be some kind of mysterious attack. Today, we'll discuss the current state of U.S.-Cuba relations. My guests are Frank Calzone, the executive director of the Center for a Free Cuba in Washington, D.C., according to his organization's website, the mission is to promote a peaceful transition to a Cuba that respects human rights and political and economic freedoms. Mr. Calzone joins me in studio. And joining us by telephone from San Diego, California, is Richard Feinberg, a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, a Washington, D.C.-based think tank, and he's also a professor of international political economy at the University of California, San Diego. Before we get into discussing the president's new restrictions on trade and travel with Cuba, let's get a little background on the policies of unfreezing relations with Cuba enacted during the Obama administration. Frank, what significant actions were the result of the Obama administration's policies on more engagement with Cuba?
Well, the policy of Mr. Obama was simply a return to a discredited old policy of embracing dictators in Latin America and allowing corporate interests to play an incredible role in American foreign policy.
Richard, your take.
I have a different take. So if one talks about discredited policies, 50-plus years of trying to strangle a government in Cuba through economic sanctions, the government is still in place. So I think Obama decided to try a different approach. I don't think he was naive. He didn't think that by relaxing some of the sanctions that would overnight turn Cuba into a capitalist democracy. But he thought that by engaging Cuba in international exchange and commerce and trade and investment and tourism, that would create an environment, a more relaxed environment, in which a gradual transition towards a more pluralistic economy and hopefully a more open polity would follow on.
Frank, what kind of impact has the relaxed policies had on Cubans?
Well, the relaxed policy, if one wants to call it that, Mr. Obama has meant that the Cuban military and the Cuban security forces have received millions and millions of dollars while repression continues to increase in Cuba, while the ladies in white continue to be beat up when they go to church or try to go to church to pray for the political prisoners. Mr. Obama was not even capable of getting Raul Castro to stop beating up women who only go to church on Sundays. Amnesty International just put out a release, a great report about a week ago, indicating that the so-called reforms of Havana and the self-employed is simply another tool of repression in Cuba, that folks who the government feels that are not reliable cannot engage in even limited economic activity like selling fruits or doing any or being a barber or anything like that. This is the outcome of Mr. Obama. Other people don't want to see it, but that's the fact. That's what's happening in Cuba today.
So, in other words, the oppression by the Castro regime has intensified?
It has intensified. The level of repression has intensified. The military receive most of the money that goes to Cuba. The policy of trading with Cuba did not begin with Mr. Obama. For many years, the United States was selling all kind of things to Cuba. The problem with Havana was not selling, but providing credits to Cuba. Havana is broke. Havana wanted to get American dollars, and people behind Mr. Obama were moving in that direction.
Richard, your take to the report.
Well, first on the issue of where resources go. You know, I travel to Cuba once or twice a year. I've been doing that the last 5 or 6 years. And so I have seen with my own eyes the enthusiasm and the growth of an emergent private sector in Cuba. The numbers are at least half a million people work legally, that is to say with government authorization in the private sector. And I would add to that at least another half a million. So that's up to 20% of the workforce have at least one foot in the private sector. And a lot of the money that flows from Americans, either as tourists or from friendly remittances, goes towards that private sector, not towards the Cuban state. So if you stay at a bed and breakfast, if you eat at a private restaurant, if you take a private taxi, all of those goes directly into the hands of individual Cubans and their families and benefits them, which is why the overwhelming majority of Cubans, and certainly the overwhelming majority of Cubans working in the private sector, and I can report on this from many conversations, welcome with open arms the policy of relaxation and engagement that the Obama administration began with. Now, with regard to the police state activities, of course, Cuba is a one-party state with a very extensive security apparatus. That's obvious. The issue is what to do about that. And the idea of trying to beat them over the head with sanctions and harsh language, that's what we've been doing for 60 years, and that has not caused the Cuban military to give up power. So the issue is, we see a problem, but what's the best approach? In terms of whether things are getting better or worse, you know, it depends upon your yardstick. My overall impression, though, is that Cubans are more willing to talk out loud today and more willing to offer their own opinions, more willing to criticize the government than was the case 5 years ago. That's my own personal experience. Is it a wide-open democracy? Obviously not. But is it a fierce totalitarian Stalinist state? I would say there's been considerable relaxation over the last 5 years.
You're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. Here's a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab at our website at voanews.com/encounter. Connect with us by email at encounter@voanews.com or check out our Facebook page at Carol Castiel VOA. Today, we're talking about the current state of U.S.-Cuba relations in light of President Trump's new restrictions on U.S. travel and trade with the island nation. My guests are Frank Calzon, who joins me in studio. He's the executive director of the Center for a Free Cuba, Washington, D.C. And joining us by telephone from San Diego, California, is Richard Feinberg, a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, a Washington, D.C.-based think tank, and a professor of international political economy at the University of California, San Diego. Frank, looking at the president's new policies on U.S. travel and trade with Cuba, what do the new restrictions do and what don't they do?
Most people who go to Cuba don't stay in bed and breakfast. All the tourist industry in Cuba is in the hands of the military. All the hotels are in the hands of the military. At the very least, let's try to get the facts on the table, and then we could disagree on what they mean. But let's get the facts up there. Secondly, yes.
Rick, could I just jump in there?
Let's let Frank finish what he has to say, and we'll get back to you, Richard.
Yeah. Okay. The facts are there on the table. The Cuban tourist industry is under the control of the military. No one can do business. When you're talking about the self-employed that Dr. Feinberg talks about, you're talking about a handful of people that do some business, and they have to obey the Cuban government. They cannot in any way have a different point of view. As Amnesty International has said, if the government thinks that you might think differently, you are not allowed to do that. And what is it that you're allowed to do? You could be a barber. You could make paper flowers to sell. No industry has been allowed to grow outside the Cuban control. The Cuban economy is under the military. What we're talking about is somebody that has a little restaurant, and even that, you have to be go along with the government. Beyond what these restrictions mean, the United States, the last time I checked, is the country of laws. We talk about the rule of law. There is in the books a law that says that tourism to Cuba is prohibited. Mr. Obama tried to get around that by saying that tourists were not tourists. They were engaged in something else. Well, let's go back to the basics. Women get beat up when they go to pray on Sundays. I would like to see Dr. Feinberg and others who are interested in Cuba plead publicly with the Cuban government to stop beating those women. If we cannot get the Cuban government to stop beating innocent women on Sundays, what is there to talk about?
Let's go to Richard for your response.
Well, just very briefly on this religious freedom issue. The fact is that both the Catholic Church has gained considerable ground. Three popes have actually visited Cuba, signaling that they believe that a policy of engagement is better for the Catholic Church than a policy of hostility. And Protestant and evangelical churches are increasingly active in Cuba today, and much of that money and support comes from abroad and from the United States. Mm-hmm. Issue of where the tourist money goes, there's something like, there's over 20,000 rooms now owned in private homes catering to tourists. That's a significant portion of the total number of rooms. And even with rooms for tourists that are provided by the state, most of those are actually provided by the Ministry of Tourism, not by Gaviota, which is the military-owned tourism, state-owned enterprise. So, many of the hotels are still state-owned, but that's Frank keeps insisting on military. And I think the Cuban society and government is more complex than just, a unitary military dictatorship, that the civilian ministries, including the Ministry of Tourism, are actually very powerful and, in fact, provide at least half of the rooms in hotels available to tourists.
Richard, in implementing these new restrictions, the Trump administration basically said their aim was to make sure that the military, intelligence, and other aspects of the Cuban government wouldn't benefit from American dollars.
Exactly, implying that it is possible for tourists to visit the island without directly benefiting the military. And so, therefore, the Trump administration really just very marginally altered the rules with regard to U.S. travelers to Cuba. So Americans are still free to visit Cuba under certain people-to-people rules. They're not supposed to just go to the beach and have a good time. No. You can't have a good time when you visit Cuba. You have to have a full-fledged program whereby you engage with Cuban society. And I think that's okay. But that's a clear signal from the Trump administration that they do believe that it's possible for Americans to visit Cuba in a constructive way, in a way that advances pluralism in Cuba, that spreads ideas that Americans stand for, and it's possible to spend money in Cuba in ways that do not go directly into the coffers of the Cuban security forces.
The changes that the president proposed doesn't completely gut President Obama's ease of restrictions. Frank?
Let's say real quick. Evangelical churches have been bulldozed this year, several of them. I don't know where the guest gets this information, but you could look it up internationally, what's happening to that. You could say that there are a few people that have some business. I gather by what I hear this evening that Dr. Feinberg has no objection to Mr. Trump blocking any money from the United States going to the Cuban military, the security services, or the political police. That's good news. I'd like to put out a press release on that. Second, yes, I do. I do.
Thank you, Fred. Thank you for the publicity.
Well, as far as what the president is saying, an American tourist goes to Cuba today. It's no different than the American tourist that went to Cuba when I was a child on the Batista. Tourists go to have a good time, to go to the beach, to go to a nightclub, to music, to enjoy the people-to-people contact that they have in Mexico or somewhere else. The idea that, quote-unquote, a tourist, you name it whatever, is going to be an instrument of political change in Cuba is simply not accurate. Let's deal with the facts. Cuba is a police state. I was just talking to a young man half an hour ago, 21-year-old, expelled from the university. He's part of an institute that works for religious freedom in Cuba. The American professors ought to pay attention to Cuban students getting expelled from the university as we speak. Mr. Obama did not extend a hand of friendship to Cuba. Raul Castro welcomed back Soviet or Russian spy ships into Havana Harbor. The President Obama extended a hand of friendship to Cuba. Cuba was caught trying to smuggle warplanes to North Korea. Do we have to say more?
Yeah, well, first, in response to Frank's point that an evangelical church was bulldozed, what I can report from personal experience, that you can walk in main streets in Havana and in provincial cities on the weekends, and you will hear coming out of many buildings religious chants being sung with very loud and proud voices by evangelical congregations. So evangelicalism as well as Catholicism is spreading rapidly on the island, and that's the basic fact, and I can testify that from my own personal experience.
What Frank said a little earlier is that Raul Castro is allowing Russian spies back into Cuba.
Well, first, I would say, you know, if we want to limit the influence and presence of other powers, we should be there ourselves as active as we are allowed or can be, rather than pull back and create a vacuum that others can fill.
Frank?
There's a limit to what the United States could do. Now, the United States should do more so the Russians are not there. What could have Mr. Obama done to prevent Raul Castro from shipping warplanes, missile technology to North Korea? Is that the action of a government that wants to have normal relations with someone like President Obama? One has to go and take a look at the real nature of the Cuban government, what the Cuban government does to the Cuban people. And I'm not simply talking about somebody that I talked to. The information is there. Take a look at what Amnesty International says about the self-employed and the economic changes under Castro being tools of repression. That is Amnesty International who's saying that.
Okay, one final question I want to ask both of you, since we need to look into the future a little bit, and that is Miguel Díaz-Canel, said to be the next leader of Cuba. Richard, do you have thoughts about this new forthcoming leader of Cuba?
Sure. Well, historically, it's very important that after over 50 years of the Castro brothers being in charge of running Cuban affairs, they will Fidel, of course, has passed away. Raul, 86, will retire from being president, although he will remain for a year or two as head of the Communist Party and still influential. But basically, the Castro is passing from the scene. Lots of rumors about another Castro possibly stepping into their shoes, but I think those are probably unfounded. Nobody knows exactly what goes on within the Politburo, so you can't be 100% sure. But most Cubans anticipate that, as you say, there will be a passing of the baton to a significantly younger generation. Díaz-Canel is in his mid-50s. He, of course, did not personally participate in the revolution back in the late 50s, so he's a very different animal. My contacts tell me that they had some interaction with him when he was Minister of Higher Education, as they call it, or the university system, and that people found him intelligent, relatively open-minded, good to deal with. On the other hand, of course, we have to recognize he's been a Communist Party official or activist, you know, his whole adult life. That's his career within the party. So it very much remains to be seen how he behaves. We don't know. I can tell you what I think he ought to do in terms of his interests and the interests of Cuba, which is to more definitively move forward, take some of the changes that began under Raul, which is to say more openness to the global economy, willingness to take in more private investment, cultivate this domestic private sector, take those positive directions and build on them in a much more urgent and dramatic way. I think that way he's more likely to enhance his own prestige, to fortify the legitimacy of a more forward, reform-minded government in Cuba, and accelerate a peaceful transition to a more open, pluralistic, and more prosperous Cuba.
Frank, you have the final word today.
Well, first of all, one doesn't have to know what's happening inside the Politburo to look at the photographs. There's a man that was alluded to a second ago, Alejandro Castro Spin. He's the colonel in the Cuban military. He's a colonel in the security forces. He's the son of Raul Castro. There's a picture of Alejandro with Raul and with President Obama in Panama. There's another picture of Raul and Alejandro and the President Obama in New York. There's also another similar picture in Havana. That says something. The Cuban people understand that the Cuban economy is under the control, under the hands of the son-in-law of Raul Castro. The political party in Cuba is not really that significant. We saw what happened at the end of the Soviet Union. All of a sudden, the party was dissolved. Nobody cared about it. In Cuba, it's the same thing. I am surprised that the future president of Cuba has not had a heart-to-heart conversation with Dr. Feinberg, because his suggestions are very good. But what the Cubans said 2 weeks ago is do not expect any change. Stability is the word, he said. We got to stay on the same path. That is what they're telling the Cuban people, by the way, while they're selling humanitarian assistance that was sent to Cuba after the hurricane. The Cuban government is not distributing it. They're selling it to the Cuban people.
And I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. My guests were Frank Calzon, the executive director of the Center for a Free Cuba, Washington, D.C. According to the organization's website, its mission is to promote a peaceful transition to a Cuba that respects human rights and political and economic freedoms. And Richard Feinberg, a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, a Washington, D.C.-based think tank, and a professor of international political economy at the University of California, San Diego. Thanks, gentlemen, for joining us today.
My pleasure, Rick.
Thank you.
I'd also like to send out a big thank you to our own Alex Nasserja for all his work in booking today's show, and to our studio technician, Tian Wang. And thanks to you as well for taking time to listen today. Encounter was produced at the VOA Studios in Washington, D.C. I'm Rick Bantaleo. Be sure to join Carol Castiel again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.